So we can continue just talking. I just think that it's interesting to have things recorded. No, I think that companies like Qualtrics and Vivint, I think they have really, really strong brands. But that's it. And so it's scary because if you don't have like valuable product behind your strong brand, like branding doesn't like th that is a scary place to work because it's like, well, what if, the entire landscape changes?
And the interesting thing about companies like that, and a lot of the companies around here, who do we have around here? We have Adobe, we have Domo, we have, eBay, and Vivint and Qualtrics. And most of these companies may not seem quite as sexy, just because they're not B2C companies. They're not necessarily as consumer facing. Though, of course, Vivint is definitely home automation for consumers, but I think a lot of their efforts will be in the business realm, in the business to business, as far as they're working on solar and more business home automation. And Qualtrics, certainly, if you just go on their website and look at a list of who their just who their consumers are, who they're selling to, it's mostly academic. It's mostly universities and some businesses.
Qualtrics, as compared to Vivint, is going to be a much more stable company. Just because, Qualtrics has all of these people who will prop them up no matter what they do. Like even if their product tomorrow was garbage, at least like all of the people that have contracts with them will still have contracts with them. But with Vivint, like I think they sound like they have a great culture there, and that they have a culture of innovation, which is cool. But what are they? And I still get very, very different answers from different people on what Vivint is. Yeah, well, because they started with security, now they're talking about home automation, but they're also talking just about being like a services company. And I just I don't think there's room for Vivint in services,
Okay,
but
I see what you're saying.
anyways.
So you're saying, what is this company's mission statement? Is that kind of what you're asking?
One of the things that strong brands have to have is a clear understanding of what they want to do for people. Besides the actual, we're just going to make money for the company.
Well, and I think that your comment about a company like Vivint is valid in the fact that, there's Vivint Wireless and Vivint Solar and Vivint Home Automation and Vivint Broadband
What
Internet.
won't Vivint do?
Well, I could ask the same question about a company like Google, right? What aren't they going to do? Or goodness, this week, you could say the same thing for Facebook, right? Hey, we're just going to purchase this virtual reality hardware maker. Is that really Facebook's business? Is that really
Sure, but
their company?
if I said to you, what's Google's core product? I don't think that's changed. Yeah. Like, what would you say their core product is?
Well, Google is an advertising company. They are looking
You
for
think that
information and
they're
data.
not an advertising company? That's funny. They've chosen advertising to monetize what they do, but their Google's core product is search. Right? Like they started as a search company. That's the thing that like if you ask them, like tell me about your history, they would talk about search at the beginning. And them going into services and all and like Android and all this stuff, it's like an extension of that. And I think like the Facebook thing is incredibly valid because what's Facebook's core product? No, like I don't know anymore.
Well, it was connecting people. It was.
Yeah, like they were the first social network, but that's not necessarily a product, which is like it's hard for them to answer what they're gonna do for their customers. Like, what do they do for their customers right now? They let them, post to Facebook, I guess, but they monetize that same way as Google does with ads. But I don't think that Facebook or Google would say they're an advertising company.
I think, yeah, you're right that Google's core product is search, but search that leads them to be able to advertise and monetize. So you're right, I was talking about how are they making money. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's my point with Vivint, is it feels like their core, that like, and I shouldn't say core product, but like their mission is money, not like an end goal. Qualtrics is a little different, I think, because Qualtrics, I think, might have some more of an idea of what they want to do for their consumers, right? It's like, we want to provide great survey information to our consumers. But then they do dilute that with trying to sell their company as like a startup, which Qualtrics, by anyone's measure, is no longer a startup. But they really want to appeal to like people like you that way. Does that make sense of what I'm saying? And so like Vivint and Qualtrics and to a lesser extent Adobe, but sometimes I think that a lot of what is said about them in our circles is about why working for them would be cool, as opposed to about like what they do as a company. Which, I mean, we'll talk about this in a bit, but is branding. It's what they choose to talk about to the people who are interested in them. Okay, so let's maybe just talk a little bit about this show, the idea of the show. So, I'm wondering, like, what you thought when I asked you to do something like this.
So my first thought was, I was excited. Over the past couple weeks, I've been thinking, well, I spend a lot of time reading about companies, reading about consumer products, trying to research industries that I'm interested in, and is there any way that I can make that more useful, more valuable? I don't want to use the phrase, can I make it work for me, but kind of. Would that be starting a blog and linking to consumer products and just using affiliate marketing and hoping to gain some sort of following that way? Would it be something like this where it's a podcast? Is it just something that helps me gain experience voicing opinion and receiving feedback, you know, and just engaging in communication with other people who are studying similar topics or similar industries? So I was excited when you talked to me about it, just because it's, you know, it will probably evolve over the course of us talking and, you know, different segments that we may do or different organization of the show and how we talk about companies. Maybe it will turn from something that is anecdotal, where we're just kind of, you know, shooting from the hip talking about these companies, to something that's a little bit more research driven or research oriented, where we're coming with some more hard facts and figures. I'm not quite sure, and I don't know how it's going to move about.
And I as I was thinking about how to talk about the show, I was like, you know, I really haven't explained to Brian what I even like my vision of the show beyond talking about brands, right? Like consumer brands and ads. So I pose the second question to you, because I think that it might make my point better than if I had just said it. Why do you think I asked you specifically beyond just being one of my good friends?
Well, I feel like we have been studying a similar discipline from two different perspectives. And I think that from your perspective, as you're looking to build your portfolio, not only through the digital advertising that you're doing and the physical things that somebody could look at, whether it's online or in a printed book, you want people, whether it's grad school or your colleagues and peers or people that you're interviewing for, to be able to see that you understand the industry that you're studying about and that you hope to work in. And you probably wanted to talk to me about it because I'm studying from just a little bit of a different perspective. Branding, marketing, advertising, you know, all these words can come together, and sometimes people will make them synonymous. And they're not necessarily synonymous, though they are often pointing towards the same goal. And so that's why I would assume that you wanted to talk to me, is because I may be studying things more from, you know, a business, how's this going to make us money perspective. And you may be studying things more from, well, how can this really communicate to our consumers or change our image perspective? Both with the end goal of to help our company be more profitable and to help our consumers, but maybe just going about it different means.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think that coming from different sides of the same coin, which we'll talk about in just a sec, but coming about to our, like, coming together and talking about our opinions in a way where, like, I know that you'll challenge, like, the interests of a brand when I say, here's what you know, here's bad, here's a bad example, here's a good example. Like, different disciplines will say different things, and I definitely like that tension is not only important to understand, but also like makes for like the actual discussion. Because a lot of people can say that's a good ad or a bad ad based on what they feel, like, oh, I like that or I don't like that. But it's another thing entirely to come at it from the idea of kind of like I'm coming at it from a creative perspective, and you might be coming at it from the business perspective or a numbers perspective. And I think that those when those two things align like perfectly, like that's what makes the best kind of advertising.
Right. And I would hope that talking with each other would help us improve. I mean, I certainly, it's always, it's something that I'm very conscious of as a person who is about to graduate, and perhaps you are as well, where you sit here thinking, how many students are there across the country or across the world that have spent several years getting a university education and feel like maybe I don't have any hard skills, or what value can I add to a company? And so that is, that's something that I had a little trepidation, a little fear about coming into the podcast here this week, just saying like, well, I wonder if I don't have that much to add, or what if Brian and I don't really have different viewpoints on things, and it's not quite as beneficial as we had hoped. And this will be interesting to see how we might be able to play off each other, or if we understand our disciplines enough to have valuable discussion, and hopefully we'll learn and we'll grow, and this will help us and people who potentially listen as well.
So, one of the things that I kind of inspired this podcast is I listened to a podcast called Hypercritical. Have you ever heard of Hypercritical? It's a guy with a guy named John Siracusa, and he does a really cool show where it's him and this other guy named Dan Benjamin, and it's mostly him complaining about things and Dan Benjamin taking the opposite opinion on those things. And I was like, I would love to do something like that, because my show with Jordan is more like, let's just talk about things that are fun, right?
Which I still haven't been a guest on for quite some time, by the way.
If I can ever get Jordan to agree to podcast, you're definitely invited. It's not out of it's out of convenience, out of as opposed to like that show comes together whenever it can, I guess. But I thought more and more about how I loved hearing about especially the world of technology through people who've studied technology, like computer scientists or coders or designers or people with strong backgrounds in it. And I was like, it would be cool to hear from people who talked about advertising that way. And I went and looked, and there's almost nothing out there. So in true business fashion, we are going to fill a market demand. If only for myself, that like people should be talking about this in a podcast format, at least in my opinion.
I agree.
So,
I'm trying to think of other examples that I see. I mean, you can go to Adweek or some other website to see people have
sure.
their, quick couple paragraphs, their thoughts about an ad, and then just post in the comments.
But don't you think that like Adweek and even just some of their affiliate brands are really run editorially, as opposed to like something like Daring Fireball or even just a blog about technology, where it's like, I'm a person and here's what I think because of who I am. And in advertising, and at least in everything that covers advertising, it's usually like, I'm an organization and here's how I'm going to tell you like how you should feel. I don't know. I like the and a lot of it might be like that people that work in advertising can't talk about advertising in a public domain because they work in it. And that certainly might be true for us someday, but this is a perfect time for us to that not be true.
Right. Oh, and I would agree. I mean, you read something in, on Adweek, and it's here's a little blurb written by our company with some kind of generic thoughts, but it's never, or hardly ever, somebody's personal thoughts that may be controversial. I think this, or I very much dislike this, or I very much applaud this, and it's not often that kind of opinion that's being shared. So you're right. I think that hopefully we can share those kind of opinions. It's not that not to say that we're opinionated people or anything.
Very tongue in cheek there. So I think that what I would lastly, before we move on to the actual show, the thing that I want to just impress upon you at the beginning is that I might rant a little bit on the show. And I want pushback. And so don't let me browbeat you into like thinking or agreeing with me. Like I want you to disagree. So, and if you get a chance between now and the next couple shows, you should listen just a couple episodes of Hypercritical, because you'll get exactly maybe the thing I'm going for. Yeah, well, because you're more rationally oriented and smart, in my opinion, and I tend to get a little bit more passionate and emotional, but I think both are valid. You know, both are very valid approaches. So. I
mean, good cop, bad cop, that's what we'll do.
Is that okay? Is that okay with you if we do that?
No, it's, okay. It sounds good.
So, about the show, which is what I think we're going to call branded, if you disagree or agree with that term. Because you're in marketing and I'm in advertising, and I think the thing we share is branding.
Sure. Yeah, I like that name.
Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I like that name.
Okay. So, the way I want the show to kind of operate is that we start with follow-up from the show prior. And follow-up doesn't necessarily mean that we get a bunch of, you know, tweets or anything like that. It's more just like, hey, since our last show, I thought about this or more, or this changed with this company, or this changed with this ad. And we just talk about that at the beginning of the show. That way it gives us some continuity from show to show. And then we'll move on to the actual topic of the show we're doing, which is like talking about a specific company, their best ads, their worst ads. And before we do that, we just kind of do a little bit of an informal SWOT analysis or a history of the company. And I think for those that don't know what SWOT analysis is, it's strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats. What do you think about that format of the show?
I think that sounds great. Yeah. And then obviously, where would you be hoping to pull a SWOT analysis from? Just our own research, or just what we feel like are the company's strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats?
I mean, I like to get into actual, research when you can, but it's a podcast, so I wouldn't expect it to be, report style. Does that make sense? Like the SWOT more like what we just did with Google and Facebook at the beginning of the show. That's an idea of a SWOT, right? Like you're just talking about its position in the marketplace. And where, how it come to be where it is, and if that affects their advertising and or marketing in any way. Cool. Okay. So let's get into it. Today we're not going to talk about a specific company. We're going to talk about branding itself. And I think that I probably have some opinions that you're going to be able to challenge me on. Okay. So the difference between branding, advertising, and marketing is what we're going to talk about at the beginning. If you could just give an armchair description of those three terms, what would you do? What would you say?
Well, I think that when people think about a brand, they're generally thinking about something that's a little more emotionally connected. When you see a logo, what do you think about it? When you hear the name or the slogan of a company, what are your thoughts and feelings? So I think it would be, what are your feelings about the brand? Advertising would be, how are you communicating those feelings, whether that's through television or print or radio or on the internet. And then I think generally when people think of the marketing, maybe they think of something that's a little more holistic, that it could be the logo and the ads, and also what stores it's in. Is it in a high-end store? Is it in a low-end store? How is this brand or this company trying to position themselves? Those are certainly not textbook definitions, but I think that's what most people would think about.
I used to think of this as really easy to understand, and it's changed a little bit in the past couple maybe months of my life where I've started thinking more about this. I used to think of it as a communications umbrella where marketing encapsulated advertising and branding would be a specific branch of advertising, like a brand ad. And I think that in some ways that works because you have like a marketing company that, does research, and then they take that to the advertisers, and the advertisers say, this is what we're going to make. And if we want to make an ad that brands this company, we'll make an ad that brands this company. But the problems with the hierarchy is that interests are different in each one of those places. And so they can't really fall inside of each other every time. Marketing and advertising interests, I think, like, even though they arrive at the same place, they're coming from two different sides. Even though they end in the same spot, with great advertising and communication, and like you said, like in store or a lot of times marketing, even like with digital and stuff like that, is it's going to be a big deal. But they arrive at that from the business perspective, as opposed to advertising arrives at that through like a creative, okay, then whittle it down with strategy type perspective.
Yeah,
So
I mean, when I think about the umbrella of marketing, there's a whole lot of different things that could be. Most people probably think, if I tell them I'm a marketing student or I'm going into marketing, they think that I'm going to do event promotion or that I'm going to be creating flyers or posters or
sure.
something like that. But specifically for myself, I mean, my area is in market research and market segmentation, trying to find out who is our target, what are they like, who is our consumer. And I don't really have much to do at all with creating advertisements or promoting the brand other than making sure that it's in line with what our consumers want and who our target is. But then it could be, well, the marketing in terms of who the sales team is and how they do sales. Is it through a call center? Is it through door to door? Is it through something that's just online? Do we go through QVC or something like that? And so,
So would you agree that that marketing and advertising have very different like motivations for the things they're doing? Like can like do you even think of it that way? When you hear about someone who says they're in advertising as opposed to someone that says they're in marketing, do you think that those two people view the process by which they're doing the same, some of the same things, like, is really different.
I mean, I would generally say that the person who's in marketing is probably more focused on the bottom line and the money trail, and that the
Sure.
person in advertising is generally more focused. And this could be because they're just at an agency as opposed to at the company, at a specific company itself. That they're more focused on, are we communicating the right message? Whether or not that leads to, an increase in profits or sales or revenue or anything like that. But that may not be entirely true. I don't know.
So this is I'm asking a leading question. I think that there is a like a really complex problem is that we don't even know if advertising and marketing should be separate, because sometimes they're not. And I think in the majority of like small America, small businesses, they're the same thing, right? Like people who are working with small businesses, unless it's an agency or unless it's like a MBA, I don't think that I think there's just one guy that probably makes these decisions on both for both of these things. And we're going to talk about the kind of the roots of where branding even came from, and we're going to get to some of the problems of the fact that like should marketing and advertising be in the same place, or does an agency model make more sense? That all those kind of questions that frankly I don't think anyone has answered definitively, because advertising in general is pretty young. So I'm just going to recap some of what how branding came about, which is what is branding. So the word branding started with the livestock branding, right? So when you have like a cow that's yours, you would literally take a brand that you put into a fire and then seared that onto an animal, which as you think about it is kind of dark, but that was some of the only ways that farmers and ranchers could keep track of the animals that were theirs. So that's where the term comes from, is the idea of branding something into your product. And so animals are a lot of times pointed to as being the beginning of that, but I think that sometimes people start there with animals or manufacturing. And I think that branding goes back a lot further into into history. And I'll give you some examples. Artists who signed their paintings or their sculptures at the bottom. That was a very primitive form of branding, because they knew that this is my product, and if people see this, they need to see and associate this with something so that my name will be recognized. The other example I have is the early days of Christianity, where the Jesus fish would be the way that you identified the fact that you and that person were a part of the same organization. And, you know, governments would do this, famously, like the Roman Empire did this with, you know, making their own currency, which was a form of brand, right? It's like anyone with this type of currency belongs to us. And that's how they, a lot of the Roman history became, you know, like recognized is by their currency even.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that any pretty basic study of anthropology, you'd see groups, whether it was by their clothing or by the way they structured their homes or who was the leader in an organization, ha had some form of, well, this is our tribe, this is our group, we wear this type of clothing or we do our hair in this type of way, or even if you look at wedding bands, you know, I think that people brand themselves
Yeah.
to each other through their wedding bands or through some other form of I guess religiously through clothing. And I would agree that branding isn't always necessarily driven by consumer products.
And those are some great examples. Awesome. That's awesome. But the business related branding, where we classically think of branding now, began with the rise of the trademark, which is really interesting to me because that means that the reason that branding started coming about is because people wanted to say, this is my work and you cannot copy it. You cannot copy the thing that I made and profit off of it. And this is kind of achieved in a really interesting way because when the Industrial Revolution first started kind of taking hold, manufacturing plants and factories would brand their machinery or their packaging. Like if you're making, let's say, alcohol and you put your drink into barrels, you'd brand the barrel so that someone else wouldn't steal your alcohol and say that it was theirs, right? It was like a, no, this is our stuff. This is a way of keeping inventory and all that kind of stuff. But what ended up happening is that the people who would buy your product to sell to consumers would recognize your packaging and say, we only buy from that company, or we'll only buy from that company. So they started recognizing quality and associating quality with the company that was providing that quality for them. And that sounds like really basic, but there was a time which people wouldn't buy products based on what they thought was quality or what they thought was trusted. They would just buy what was available to them, right? It's like, well, this is this product A, right? This is the only toothpaste of, oh, toothpaste is even a bad example because like this is the only banana that I can buy. So I don't care if it's Chiquita. I don't care if it's like I'm going to buy this because it's the only one I can buy. But I think, go ahead.
I was going to say, so as a result of just economics, you know, branding is something that became more common or more necessary, right? Whether
Sure.
that was initially, like you've talked about, a form of protection, whether this is a trademark or I want you to know that this is from my company, you know, to turn to a form of pride or a form of leverage in the fact that you should buy my product because, well, now there are 10 competing bananas out there to stay with what you were
Yeah.
talking about. Now there isn't just one banana because, you know, whether it's the Industrial Revolution or railroads or transportation, something that has enabled consumers to get more than just one banana. So choice made it more necessary for a company to focus on what is our brand, what are we trying to communicate to people, as opposed to just this is ours, don't touch it.
The way they arrived at that though is crazy because what they didn't say was, hey, we should really make people realize that what we're making is from us. It was the opposite. It was the consumers identified how to do that before companies even knew that that's what the people wanted from them. And a lot of that comes from the fact that like companies used to not exist, right? It was just like the king of your country decided those things. But you know, companies didn't know that. And the I you know tr com contrast that with what we have today, which is like that's all some companies think about, which is how do we get people to know our name? Even before they know our product, how do we get people to know our name? That was just very interesting to me. And I said this is the first example of business to business advertising, like. That people just recognized the brand of that machine or that brand of that like the barrel thing, it keeps coming back in my mind that brands onto barrels, which is really kind of a cool thing in my mind. And then advertising kind of starts taking off in the 1900s, into kind of the 1940s to today, where you get that Mad Men era of, hey, we are actually going to have an industry devoted to telling people about products and telling people about the things we're making. And that's where branding starts.
The slideshow carousel into the time machine, right? Something that transports you back to your memories, into the things that connect to your heart.
That great Mad Men episode,
All
right?
right.
Where
Well,
he,
I can con neither
have you seen
confirm
that?
nor deny that that's what I'm referencing. Yes, of course. Of course.
You
No,
don't,
of course
are
that's what I'm
you?
referencing.
Oh, okay. I was like, you gotta be watching Mad Men. I mean, anyone listening to this podcast should certainly be watching Mad Men. So, the Don Draper references will be heavy and will be often. So like manufacturers identified this and they started developing social, psychological, and anthropological sense of their brands, so that it's not just, oh, this product belongs to this company, but it's, oh, this company represents this and this and this. And this is where I'm gonna go a little bit on a rant because I don't think a lot of people think about this. Why do companies exist? Well, of course, they need to make money and provide for their families. But I think a modern explanation of why companies exist is to do something. It's to make something better or to fulfill a need that a consumer has. And I think that at its like most high level, at the like pinnacle of what branding should represent, it's the idea that a company would love to tell its consumers and the world itself what it wants to stand for and what it wants to do and represent and give to the world and to like the universe, you know, just how it wants to make its mark. And I think that when branding's done really well, a company can express an honest, authentic message to the consumer that says, if you buy our product, if you do this, then you're contributing to like this overall thing, and you will be served in this way. At its most cynical, so kind of going backwards on that, branding is, I'm going to make you remember a name, and you don't even necessarily have to know why you want this, but you will want it. And so that's like getting into the whole idea that like consumerism is taking over our lives, right? That we only care about the brands that we buy. We don't actually care even about the products anymore. We just care about what the brand says about us, and we're really vain, and that's all we want from a company is like a good brand. So I think you compare and contrast the two views, that advertising is the worst and marketing is the worst, because all they want to do is get a brand out there to make money and to expose the consumer, as opposed to we're going to take pride in what we are and we're going to communicate that effectively to the rest of the world. So I don't know if you can kind of tell me if you disagree with that view or if you agree with that view, but I would be very interested.
I definitely
Sure.
have thoughts in the fact that I would say that a company that doesn't understand or have even as their goal to provide value to their consumers is not going to be a company that succeeds. Now, maybe that value is only the pride of owning a specific brand, but even at that point, I don't think that that company would be. I guess it would determine what success looks like for that company. In my
Sure.
mind, companies that are only focused on their consumers having the pride of wearing the brand, well, those aren't necessarily large companies. They're high-end companies that may not sell that many units. I mean, you think about a Ferrari or a Porsche or something like that. I haven't studied those companies very much, but they're certainly not moving as many units as Ford or.
But don't you think so? The people at Ford, and this is a great example. The people at Ford are taking more pride in getting more cars to more people and changing the world that way. And as opposed to like Ferrari, they're taking pride in their craftsmanship, in the, you know, how incredibly nice their car is. Right? So in either of those situations, if communicate effectively what they want to do, then I can get behind either of those things. But like you've kind of pointed out, those two people might be at odds. And you would say, oh, you know, all they want to do is you know, just pump out a bunch of units. And that's like why what you do is so valuable, because like I don't care. I don't care about units. I just want to get out an effective message. But like that's also how you, what you have to consider when you're making a brand.
Right, yeah. Who are you? Are you the brand that says, well, we sell at a really high cost and we don't really care, or we're not as worried about our market share or if we're selling a lot of our cars because we sell them for three times as much as you're going to pay for something else. So I think the main point here is that a company needs to know who they are and what their core competency is and really what business they are in. A company that doesn't understand what business they're in is never going to, well, they're never going to be as effective as they need to be with their advertising, their marketing, whatever. And their brand may end up just standing for, we're snobs that just want you to buy our product just because it makes us money. And I don't think that that contributes to long-term success. I don't know how many companies you can see out there that are only in it for themselves and aren't trying to please their consumers. If you're not trying to please your consumers, I don't think you're going to be around that long.
I cannot disagree with anything you said. That's great. That's good stuff. So, so I think we're in agreement with that general idea that like good brands and see, it's hard to even define like a good brand as opposed to a good company, but good brands know what their strengths and weaknesses are and embrace them. In my opinion, what can be alarming is when a company starts wanting to be everything to everyone. And this will go back to the whole Apple thing that like, Apple says, you know, what defines us is what we say no to. And I think that that's such an interesting thing that Apple has to say that that's what they do, because every brand should say, well, what defines us is the things we're not going to be. And you work backwards from that.
Go to Amazon and search for any book on strategy or business strategy, and they're going to say just as important as the markets that you are in or the things that you choose to do are the things you choose not to do. So,
okay, but so when does that change? This is where we might start disagreeing, but when does what you do and what you don't do change? Does it change based on the amount of money that you can make on something? Like, so when a company decides, hey, we're not going to do this, why is business strategy so bad sometimes? Because like it won't take those boundaries and it'll be like, well, no, we need to expand. We need to, there needs to be more.
I'm going to pose a hypothetical situation for you, and maybe this will be what you're talking about. So let's say that a company has, you know, operated for 20, 30 years. They've always manufactured in America. The competition in their industry is increasing. And so they feel like in order to keep the profits that they need, then they need to outsource perhaps not all of their lines, but one of their lines, you know, to China or to some other manufacturing nation or to India or something like that. They need to outsource or offshore some operation. You're asking, when does, if this company initially decided we are not willing to do that, when do they decide, okay, maybe we are willing to do it?
Yeah. I mean, because that's really the question that defines a company. Because if you start with one goal and all you're doing is, I guess that like the cynical view would be, all you're really doing is moving around pieces until you can find what will make you the most amount of money. And as I'm saying that, like, well, duh, that's like the basic, like everyone's self-interested, you know, of course they're going to make rational decisions. That's how economies work. I get all that, but at maybe an emotional point of view, a more bleeding heart view would say, hey, there are, even if we make money, that's not worth it, because what we want to do is not that. And I think that business in general has a hard time with accepting this. Like companies like Apple, lots of people really dislike Apple because they do this a lot. They'll say, no, even though we can make tons of money there, that's not who we are. And like, that's bad business. To me, that's like, no, that's really good business, because you're looking not at the short term, not at what you can make today, but what you can build over, you know, 50, 60 years, what the empire that your company can become. And the reverse of that would be the fact that like empires have been built on brands that can do lots and lots of things. Like, I think of who's the people that make Post-it notes? 3M. Like, they're the most innovative company in the world. Their brand is just all about making, like, lots of awesome stuff, and they try everything. Or Google. Google's a good example of this, too. It's like, they try everything. But you get the sense that they started with that as a supposition, as saying, like, we're going to try everything and just see what sticks, as opposed to, like, oh, we're only going to do this one thing well. Now that it's going to save us more money, we're not going to do that anymore. And striking that balance is hard. I wonder what you think about striking
that balance. Well, I think that it probably depends on a lot of things. I mean, it depends on who you're trying to please, or if your goal is to gain market share, to please Wall Street, or if your goal is to, or if you really are in it. I mean, you can't be in it just for pure philanthropy, unless that ends up being your goal. Unless you say, well, maybe we're okay taking losses because it's what our consumers need and that's what we want.
And to me, it's like, okay, so, like, you made that decision based on what was good for you, as opposed to what you even were saying you wanted to do. It's like the right hand doesn't know what the left is doing. And at that point, you got to kind of take a look at your company and say, like, what are we?
Well, in the end, every company has to know what business they're in. And that's not to say the companies can't shift interests. I mean, you look at a company like IBM that has shifted from, you know, a hardware company to a software company to strictly, you know, business to business, strategic consulting sort of a company. So there can certainly be shifts, but it can take time to make those shifts, and sometimes those shifts can not pan out. And I think that we've seen in the last little bit that maybe there have been some decisions that companies like Microsoft have made that haven't helped, and I'm excited for their new CEO as well.
I mean, and IBM is another, like, great example of a company who, like, figured out that it wanted to shift, but its core group of, like, the people that loved it bemoan that. I mean, still bemoan it. They still talk about how it's like, oh yeah, like, IBM figured out how to survive, but it turns out the way they have to survive is to be completely different than what they were. And there's better examples of this, like, and again, going back to Apple, which I probably will do a lot, is Steve Jobs comes back to Apple and he immediately makes a deal with Microsoft. And on the face of that, you'd say that seems really opposite of what you'd want the brand to do, but they had to make that hard decision. And hopefully you make the hard decision once and you can continue to make better decisions going forward. Let me kind of throw that back to, like, the idea of Facebook or of even, like, something like PepsiCo or Coca-Cola. What do they want to do? A lot of times I think that companies like that, what they want to do is whatever it takes to make money. But that's not what they tell their customers. And whether or not they want to tell their customers what they want to do, or whether or not the people who are in charge of marketing for anything that PepsiCo does or anything that Coca-Cola does or anything that Facebook does, they probably know that, hey, we want to give a value proposition to the customer. But there is a sense that, like, they're being a little dishonest because they don't really care about anything except for those profit margins. That is very – it's cynical of me, and I want you to tell me why I'm wrong. I don't necessarily want to agree with you, but I want to hear why I'm wrong about something like that.
Well, I'll say this. I don't think that every company has to have a moral standing in terms of we're trying to make the world a better place. I mean, look at a company like Xerox. I don't know that they are trying to, you know, pitch themselves as we're making the world a better place. Now, they certainly could because they're a communications company. We want to help you communicate in whatever way possible, whether that's through the internet or through faxes or through paper or through whatever else Xerox does. So I don't necessarily believe that a company has to be like Disney and say, what's our mission statement? Well, it's to provide happiness to millions of people everywhere. I don't know that a company has to have that. I mean, what's Coca-Cola's mission statement? Well, it's to refresh the world, inspire moments of optimism and happiness, to create value and make a difference. And so for somebody like you, they would say, well, Coca-Cola is providing you happiness and optimism. It's, you know, you share a Coke with your friends. If you didn't have Coke, your time with your friends wouldn't be as valuable. And Facebook, I think, would say the same thing. They would say, well, you can't communicate and share life's happy moments with your friends if you didn't have Facebook. Not that there aren't competitors, but I believe that those companies do have a mission, whether that mission is something that's moral or really emotionally connected. That can always be argued, but good companies do find an emotional connection with their consumers.
This leads perfectly into the idea that what's the best way for a brand to communicate? And I have some examples, and I think this is a perfect way to illustrate what I'm trying to say. So I think that you're right. Every brand doesn't have to feel like it's going to change the world. I understand that. But a lot of the great brands will assert that, right? So the three examples I have, and I'll put this in the show notes and link to them. The first one is the Google Year in Recap. Just some consistently great ads about what Google, how Google can connect to the changing world. Do you like this ad campaign?
I do, yeah. I think the Zeitgeist campaign is great. I think that the other search, Google search ad that comes to mind is the one where the man is searching for, it's the relationship one, where he's asking for tips about a date, and then where do I go get wine in Italy, and where do we go to eat, and then it's where do I purchase a crib for a baby, or however the ad goes. And those are great because they really connect to people, and they focus on information and search, Google.
So, and I love great advertising that talks about a product, like the thing they're providing is, and that's obviously will be topic of discussion every time we talk about a company in this podcast. But these ones specifically are ones where they don't necessarily tie to the product directly. This is like, we're making indirect comparisons between this and our company. So here's what you should think about us, even when you don't think about our product. Like, here's what we are.
Right. Well, I think it goes back to a discussion of, well, are you trying to, and this is something that happens a lot in the field of technology, which we both are very interested in, is, are you trying to sell features, or are you trying to sell the value that comes as a result of those features? And this is a discussion that has been popularized because of Apple and Samsung, but it has been a discussion long before those two companies. But we see that if you look at, an iPhone's advertisement or, a Samsung phone's advertisement or other phones, other products. I think those are just two examples. Whereas, are you focusing on what the customer, the consumer is actually going to get, how their life will change or be benefited as a result of this? Or are you just focusing on how many, megapixels you've crammed into a camera or something like that?
Sure. And I mean, when a company does make an assertion about who it is without talking about features, like in specific, like those Google ads are all really, the Dear Sophie ads that Google does is another one. We'll probably talk about Google as for like a whole show. But their year in recap one is specifically doesn't show a lot of Google search. It just shows what's happened in the last year and and associating like the idea of change and progress with Google. Another good example would be for those who I hope know about the LDS Church or the Mormon Church. The family isn't about time or the Homeland ads, right?
Yeah, the
Homefront? Yeah. Homeland.
Homefront.
I always say Homeland, and I know that's wrong.
That's okay. That's okay. We're both podcasting from Utah. We are in the Mormon Homeland.
So the Homefront ads, which were these great, we're going to tell you about what's important to us about the family, which again, tangentially is related to the core vision of what the Mormon Church is, right? Like saying we're a religion and this is what we value, but they didn't necessarily state that. They just told you a really touching thing and then said, this is a message brought to you by this brand. And I know that the church is much more than a brand. It's the church. Right. But like that was what they were saying is associate us with this.
Right. And I think that, you say, the church is much more than the brand, but that's something that churches in general and the LDS Church a lot, because it's a growing church, it get accused of. Well, you're just trying to, to brand your church better as opposed to getting followers or you know, worshipers through some other means. And I would disagree with that. I think that the message is much different, and the Mormon Church doesn't do this in a negative way. But you're right that there isn't a, oh, and call this number and get a Book of Mormon, or let's talk about Joseph Smith, or even let's talk about Jesus Christ.
And
the church's name is barely in those ads. You know, at the very end, a message brought to you by the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And so I think you're exactly right that the focus is on, well, what's the value that somebody needs to feel from mm-hmm. this, and then how can we help them know that this is the person who made them feel this way. But it doesn't necessarily talk about the product, you know, for lack of a better term.
The core focus of the company, right? Which is like, join our church. No, I mean, like,
right. Well, hopefully that's not the core focus, but it can certainly seem that
way. Sure. Yeah. Okay. That's a good point. Like, saving souls. Okay. Yeah. I mean, like, lots of stuff. That's a whole rabbit hole there. And again, these are just examples of the best ways that I've seen where a company is saying, I want to communicate who I am, or not a company, who I am, a company is an I. They're saying, we want to communicate who we are as a company without necessarily giving you a value proposition of a product, right? So it's like, here's who we are. Like, believe us that this is who we are. Of course, I'm going to bring up Apple and Think Different. You could talk about their recent stuff, which is like designed by Apple in California, which we will, because there's some very interesting implications of those ads. But Think Different's another great example of this. They didn't show Apple products at all in those ads. All they did was show you who their heroes were, who the people that they're like, this is what we want to be in our world, right? Like, we want to do this kind of thing. And a cynical view would be, oh, you think that by buying a Mac, you're you know, in the same club as Albert Einstein and the Muppet guy, what's his name, Jim Henson, you know. Sure. And a cynical person would say that, like, that's not true. But if you buy into this, the idea of really good branding and really good, you know, intersection of like a great product with really good messaging, you're saying, I'm want to support this because I do identify with that. That speaks to me in a personal way.
Right. Well, and I think that the product and the company has to be authentic. I believe this is something that we're going to talk about later in the show. But I mean, when you see a brand or a company that puts out an ad or is trying to communicate something to you that feels inauthentic, then it's not something that you believe.
That's my next point, which is like the worst examples I can think of the idea of branding, right? Like, associate me, my company with X, right?
Well, and often this happens because it's something that's popular, or I think just like touching moments like families getting together, you know, soldiers being reunited with their families. And this is not to say that any of those ads are bad or inappropriate. I think it is always appropriate to show the joy that comes when soldiers are returning to their
family. But not if it's inauthentic. If it's inauthentic, you're like, well, you're just like, this is crap. You're feeding me something you think will emotionally touch me to manipulate me, not to ask me to participate in your brand, right?
That point I agree with. I was just making sure that no one who potentially listens to this thinks that I am against celebrating soldiers returning to their families.
If anyone's listening, Brian Chemway. Anti-soldier.
We live in a world where people will be offended at whatever they choose to be offended at, and I was not making an offensive comment.
No, I think your point again speaks to me, at least, of like, when depicted correctly, those are touching. When depicted incorrectly or forced, like a forced association, you feel like they're trying to manipulate you.
Right. Well, I think an easy example of this in today's world is any company that tries to send you a message that they are green or that they're eco-friendly. Yeah. I think that it is often easy to feel like, well, this is a company that's only doing this because of their, you know, their triple bottom line, that the eco-friendly segment of their bottom line is not there. And that, so they need to do something to show their consumers or just the market itself or Wall Street or whoever, like, we're a green company too. Like, we have people focusing on sustainability. And often that feels inauthentic. If you say, like, I don't want to name names or anything, but I mean, think of like any big box retailer, that's probably an easy, you know, we'll toss them in the fire. And you say, well, really, are you really all that compared about sustainability? Because you're operating in this giant warehouse at these, you know, really thin margins, and you're just trying to...
And it's not to say that the focus on green isn't a good thing, even if it's not what they, like, love. You know, like, they're not doing it out of the best intentions of their heart. But maybe don't feature that in your ad then. Because, like, do it, and do it because you know it will affect, but don't make that be the headline kind of promise of your brand. Like, and every company is to a certain extent, like, guilty of this, where it's like, okay, this is where you want to be better, but, like, until you're better, don't come to me with this, right? Like, give me the things you do well and the things you want to do well first, and then we'll talk about the other stuff later. And like, these three ads are great examples of, like, they gave me the best of themselves. And I agree with there's lots of things I don't like about Google, but I certainly agree that they're part of, like, moving the world forward. People who would be really negative against the church would say, you know, they can talk about, you know, what they don't like about the church, but certainly they would not disagree that the church focuses on the family and how important it is, right? So they're authentic ads.
Right. Well, and I mean... I'm almost of the opinion that rather than a company trying to, you know, sell me a message that they're something that they're not, I mean, I would appreciate someone being more honest. Sure. You know, what is Frank Underwood say from House of Cards? The best way to overcome or to eliminate any shred of doubt is by a flood of naked truth.
Yeah, like, be strategic. Like, being strategic doesn't mean that you're necessarily inauthentic. It just means that you're being strategic. Let's talk more about... So just a little bit more about the bad examples of this. Worst tweets of MLK Day. Yeah, worst corporate tweets on MLK. This is the most recent Martin Luther King Day. So,
yeah, the what was it? The PETA tweet in honor of Martin Luther King Day. Don't torture animals, yes, who are neglected, or something like that.
In honor of Martin Luther King and the plight of animals who are tortured, abused, and neglected. Okay. ZZ Quill, which is an offshoot of NyQuil. Today is the day for dreaming. Happy MLK Day. The worst one is the Pornhub tweet. In honor of his death, make sure to only use the ebony category today. Apology, MLK would have wanted everyone to watch interracial category today. Hashtag I have a dream.
Oh my gosh, that's so terrible.
But why is it terrible? To me, it's terrible because it's like, just tell me the thing that you're trying to say without involving some other topic arbitrarily, right? It's like, don't arbitrarily decide the thing that you're going to tell me as a company. All they're doing is saying,
well, they want to be topical.
Being topical, is it not? It's for comedians and for the news. It's not for companies.
Well, see, I'm going to fight back on this. I'm fighting back here. You said being topical is for comedians and for the news. Not when it's Super Bowl 2013 and the lights go out and Oreo says, you know, you can still enjoy Oreos in the dark. I mean, that was topical.
What did Oreo do this year in the Super Bowl?
Oh, they stayed silent.
But
right.
Why?
I think
why
there's
did
a
they
time
stay silent?
And a place. Well, I mean, sometimes you don't want the pressure of a repeat performance.
That's a good point. That's a good point. In my view, they decided that they're like, we started this trend and we don't need to play anymore because we won it. Right? Like, everyone thinks of Oreo as digitally savvy because of that moment. And it was great. It was them taking advantage of a topical subject, but that was somewhat spontaneous of them, right? It's like, we're going to do this and we're going to, like, you know, have a team ready to react to whatever happens. That's cool. But these ones here, like, these have probably been saved. I know these have probably been saved in Twitterific or Tweetbot for like a year until this moment where they're like, okay, we're going to make an association between our brand and this random thing.
Sure. Well, and I think there's a big difference between, you know, something fairly mundane, or just there's not really an emotional connection to the lights going out in the Super Bowl, unless that were an event where somebody had been hurt or injured, or it was some sort of tragedy or something. I think that's a whole lot different than, you know, a public figure and certainly a well-respected historical figure like Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
Yeah, bad taste. Just bad, I mean, bad taste, but also like strategically, this is wrong. Like, this is the wrong thing for your brand to do. It really digitally savvy brands tweet less than all these people that tweet every day. Because like quantity is not the same thing as relevance. The other bad example that I could come up with, and I'm you might disagree with this, and I think many people will disagree with this, is MetLife's decision to use the Peanuts characters. That there is nothing about MetLife to me that says like, oh, the Peanuts characters, except that they've been like, that's what we've decided. We've arbitrarily decided that the Peanuts characters are what we want to communicate. And even at their website, let me read you their their introduction to Snoopy overview. Peanuts adds an approachable quality and helps differentiate MetLife from our competitors. As MetLife develops into a global insurance leader, it becomes increasingly important to project a consistent image, and Snoopy and his friends have agreed to help us do just that. I couldn't write something that was like more cynical. Like, this is rough, because what they're saying is there's nothing we can communicate to consumers that will be approachable about our product. So we're gonna borrow brand equity from like a beloved character, and we're gonna give that to something that has no association. At least pretend there's an association, right? At least give me like a brand story about you guys that gives me like a tie. And it's like, although it is not required that all MetLife's branded entities use Snoopy, his presence does send a clear and valuable message. What?
Well, you're right. My question is, I'm not sure what message that sends, as opposed to, you know, a company like Allstate that creates new intellectual property through, you know, the Mayhem Man. What the way that you phrased it, borrowing brand equity via Snoopy and Peanuts and Charles Schulz. I don't know if that's as valuable as, well, sorry, I would agree, I would argue that it's not. It's not as valuable as creating intellectual property like the Mayhem Man. I don't feel like it resonates. I don't know MetLife well enough, so I'm not. But just as a consumer who potentially could use MetLife, I guess, I don't know how it connects to their mission statement or who their brand is or really what they're trying to communicate to me. I can see what you're saying, that some suits got in a room and decided to crunch the numbers and said, well, Snoopy is going to perform better for us than getting, you know, Terry Crews like Old Spice does. And so let's pay to, you know, to have the license the Snoopy, you know, intellectual property. My pushback was just, you said this is where I feel like I'm on the, you said you're on the team of advertising as opposed to marketing. And I said, well, I would argue that the MetLife team in this instance would be on the side of bad marketing, not necessarily marketing, but bad marketing. But I know what you mean. What you mean is a numbers driven point.
I didn't even consider the idea that, like, of course there's bad advertising, there's good advertising. Like, you I since being in the field, I know that there's like the hacks and there's the not hacks.
So let me give you an example here. It would be, to me, an example that has been very successful, and I didn't necessarily like it. And this could, you know, this will light a lot of people on fire, I'm sure. But you know something recently that made me feel like, whoa, a bunch of suits got in a room and made this decision was Frozen, that the Disney movie. I sat in that and I just felt like I can see every instance of you just crunching numbers and making these decisions. What's the most popular, you know, Broadway musical in the last 10 years? Wicked. Well, why don't we get Idina Menzel or Adele Dazeem, as John Travolta would say? You know, why don't we? What's been the second most popular? Well, the Book of Mormon. So why don't we get Josh Gad? You know, what else is? Well, the Book of Mormon. So why don't we get the Lopez to do the music? And it just seemed like moment after moment was, we made this decision purely based on some numbers and knowing that it would be popular. Now, is that a bad thing? Not necessarily. It was an entertaining film. I don't think it was the best thing ever, but people around the country and around the world love it. And it's, you know, highest grossing Disney film ever, or animated film ever, mind you. And so is that bad marketing? Is it good marketing? Is it distasteful? Oh, maybe to me, just because I felt like it was a little transparent. But it made sense at least. You know, they made choices that made people happy. And maybe this MetLife example is similar. I don't think so. I think I would agree with you that it seems like a marketing team that decided, or an advertising team, whatever, whoever the team was who put it together, decided, well, Snoopy's popular. We'll try and cram him together with our brand somehow because we think he's popular.
So taking the Frozen example even a step further, like I don't think Disney was ready for this amount of success it was going to have because they knew it was a formula movie. And it's been in development hell for a long time because there was like, well, the characters aren't quite right. Every other piece is right, but the characters aren't quite right. And they bring in John Lasseter, who's of Pixar, he's the creative director at Pixar, and they bought Pixar, so now they can use John Lasseter. And John Lasseter made a good product out of, I agree, like a formula. But at least Disney can point to that and be like, this represents what Disney does best. Tells a compelling story in a very commercial way. But there, you remember the marketing for that was really low key. It was just that
Well, it
Frozen
was very
cinema.
minimal. It was very minimal, and in fact, it didn't send the message at all of the film. I mean, the film is essentially Disney pivoting and saying, we have been accused of being a company that is sexist and that doesn't show women in a positive light, and these princesses are damsels in distress that need men to come and save them, and they're helpless. And well, we're not going to give you just one female heroine. Sorry, I guess female heroine, they're the same thing. We're not just going to give you one heroine, we're going to give you two. And again, that just seemed like, again, someone calculated and just said, well, this is what we really need to do to turn around the image of our company. And
That
that's not a
sounds like
bad
good
thing.
marketing to me. You're right. Like, 'cause it's not necessarily good advertising, but that's really good marketing. It's like let's figure out how to make this a better, like, more successful, and more money, right? More success is more money. Well, I think we're good, Brian.
Lots of companies out there. There'll be plenty of people for us to talk about.